And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of Drink with Rick. I'm Rick, and tonight we're going to try something that I have been talking about trying for a little while, but I haven't really gotten around to picking one of these up to check it out. And this would be a Cooper and Thief red wine blend. And this is going to be interesting because I know it's available in a lot of places commonly, and I've seen it around for a long, long time. I've just never gotten around to trying it myself. So it was recommended to me by someone I met at a recent house concert. One of my neighbors that puts on house concerts, she was there. Her name was Charlotte. Charlotte from Charlotte, that's what she calls herself, Charlotte from Charlotte. And she highly recommended trying this wine. When I mentioned that I did the wine stream, she says, oh, well, you have to open and review this Cooper and Thief on your wine stream. And I said, you know what, I'm going to do that. And I like to keep my promises. So tonight we're going to do that. Before we get started, a couple of things. One, of course, you can watch this. If you're watching on Facebook right now, you can watch it on Facebook, and you can watch on the Facebook page, Drink with Rick, Facebook page there. You can also watch on YouTube, my YouTube channel, Drink with Rick on YouTube. And you can also catch it live at drinkwithrick.com. We are streaming live at drinkwithrick.com. And there should be plenty of places. Now, I do have my Twitter up here, but I'm not streaming to that yet. I'm still working that out. But we're going to get there eventually. I'm still working on some things, as always. This is always a work in progress, just as much as it is a stream of consciousness kind of stream. So, we'll get there at some point. In any case, I'm glad to be here with you tonight. I'm glad you're here with me. Let's check out, first of all, and see who's in the chat with us. Sherrod's in the chat with us. It's great to see you, Sherrod. How you doing? It's been a long time since I've talked to you, too long, actually, and it's great to see you. And Chris is in the chat with us tonight. And Rob's a regular with us, although I think we missed you for a couple of weeks, but I'm glad you're here tonight. Stick around. Tell me what you're drinking. Join in the chat. Tell me what you're up to, what you're doing these days. Especially give us all a chance to catch up here. And tell me what you're drinking. Tell me what you're not drinking. Tell me what you like to be drinking. Tell me what you'd like to see me drink, because I do take requests, as we're going to prove tonight. And let's see if we have anyone in the YouTube channel. We have people watching in YouTube. Usually I don't get a lot of people actively in the chat on YouTube, but there are watching. We get people watching. So join in. I'll check in with the YouTube chat as well. And also on Twitter, if you're following me on Twitter, speak up. Tell me, if you're watching me, say, at drinkwithrick.com, because I don't have the actual chat up at Drink with Rick, just the stream. But you can chat with me, say, on Twitter at Drink with Rick. So you can tweet me there, and I will respond. I'll check I'll check Twitter periodically, and as I'm doing right now, looks like it's up. Everything's good. So this is what we have here. We have a Cooper and Thief, and let me get. I have some images of this up here. Let me pull up an image of this. This is, if you've never tried it, this is a Cooper and Thief red wine blend. And I'm reading off the label here because I don't know really anything much about this wine, except I've seen it in the stores from time to time. It's aged 3 months in bourbon whiskey barrels. So this should be interesting to taste. It says, our blend is quietly rested in bourbon barrels to produce a more complex, smooth, and rounded wine. So I'm looking forward to trying this out. According to the profile, it's dark and jammy with toasty vanilla notes. It sounds pretty good to me. This is a 750 milliliter bottle, and it's the vintage is a 2016. This is a California wine, and it is 16% alcohol by volume, which is actually fairly high alcohol content for a mainstream wine. So we'll see how it goes. I do have... You see, I can get an image of the back here because we'll take a look at the backside. And there we go. I'm going to read the back end because it might be hard to see in the video. This says an artisan blend of bourbon barrel aged red wine. And it says, well, this is really hard to read. It's very small. Some winemaking traditions were meant to be broken. That's why we rested our dark and jammy red blend in smoky, aged bourbon casks. And when we cracked that barrel open after 3 months, let's just say we knew pretty quickly that we were on to something good. Cooper & Thief is a rich wine with warm vanilla flavors and some subtle spicy notes. It finishes with a smooth smooth mouthfeel reminiscent of a fine bourbon. And there's something else on the side. I'm going to read it. It doesn't show up on the picture, but I think it's talking about why they do this in oak barrels. It says, why oak? Oak makes wine taste better. A selection of the most expensive wines in the world are produced with oak aging. Okay, this isn't an opinion, it's true. It's somewhat true. Oak is crucial in everything from the type, size, age, grain, and treatment of an oak barrel greatly affects the finished wine. Oak gives the wine sweetness. Vanilla aromas and our smoky aged bourbon casks give our wine depth and another dimension of flavor. So this should be very, very interesting to try out. I'm really looking forward to trying this wine. We're going to open up in just a minute. Let's see, Chris. Chris is in the chat. He says, I hope you're doing well, Rick. Love seeing your new projects. Chris, Sprinter Tech, Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin, right? From the Force Field days. I wish I was trying it now instead of working away on a site in Texas, but those bourbon cask aged reds are some of my favorites. And Chris, yeah, I do remember you from the Force Field days. I know we've been friends on Facebook for a while. And yes, the Force Field, it is a part of my legacy. I'll talk about that a little bit later on because I was thinking about the Force Field podcast earlier today. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, Chris goes back with me. He used to listen to the Force Field podcast, and he was part of the Force Field forums. And we actually go farther back than that, back to the On Force days, right? But that's a story for a little bit later. Chris, stick around with us. It's good to see you. And my lovely wife, Chi, has joined us. Chi's in the chat. I think she actually, before I get started on this, I also want to mention I have some food tonight, and some of this was prepared by my beautiful wife, Chi. Let me see if I can get a closer shot of this. I've got some lamb here. Chi made a really nice lamb, and I have some turkey pepperoni, some potatoes. She made these little... She cooked these little potatoes here that are very good. And I have some mozzarella cheese, some of my favorite Gaia garlic olives, garlic stuffed olives, and some crackers. I also have my bottle of water here to help keep my palate clear. So I'm ready to go. I'm pretty much ready to go here. I hope you are. And if you're not drinking, please join me because I don't like to drink alone. It's so fun to drink alone. You know, that's why we're here. So let's go ahead and open this bottle of Cooper & Thief. I'm really interested in trying this. It was highly recommended. So maybe I shouldn't set my expectations too high, because I have been disappointed before. As you may recall, if you've been watching the stream for a while, there have been once or twice, one in particular, I was a little disappointed. All right, this opened fairly easily. And also, you know, I'm opening this with my Veneto Wine Lover, my Veneto Wine Lover set. This is a set of utensils for and tools for wine. This is the wine cutter, and it's really nice. We've been using that on the wine stream. And now this is one part, this one thing that's not part of the set. This is something else. This is the contraption that my wife, she picked up for me at an estate sale some time back. I love this thing. It's great. Actually, I broke a bottle on this once because it apparently the bottle, I think the neck of the bottle was already cracked, and putting the pressure on it just broke it completely, which was interesting. But hopefully that won't happen tonight. Looks like a solid neck. So we're going to open this up, hopefully. All right, that opened up fairly easily. Yeah, it looks like everything's intact. And then we get the cork out. Let me move this out of the way. We got wine everywhere. There we go. Easier to get the corkscrew in there than it is to take it out. Set that aside. And also, to help the wine breathe, now this is a piece of the Veneto Wine Lover set. This is my aerator. It's in two pieces. And I put these two pieces together, put it, pop it in here, make sure it's in there really well. And of course, I didn't forget it tonight, to enjoy the wine, I have my Cooper's Hawk winer in my Cooper's Hawk crystal glass, genuine crystal glass. Let me get another one. There you go, that's better. This is from the Cooper's Hawk Winery and Restaurant in Orlando, Florida. I picked this up earlier this year at PodFest 2019. I'm going to go ahead and pour this in here. I'm just going to pour in a little bit at first. Whoa, it's very dark. It looks very full-bodied. Very dark complexion. I don't know if you can see this well. Let me get a close-up here. There we go. It is a very dark wine. Even with the lights, usually the lights make it look darker on camera, but it actually is very, very dark. So what you're seeing is what we're getting here, pretty much. I'm going to give it a good swirl. Not a girl swirl, a good swirl. Sometimes I wix my merds up here a little bit. Okay, we'll see what we got here. Let's see how full body it is. It does have a few legs, a little bit. Yeah, it's now. I've been told that you can tell what the alcohol content is by judging the legs, or the we call the rivulets that stream down into the glass. I've also heard that this is actually a fallacy. This is actually a myth. It's not actually true. It's just something a lot of people do. Do you believe it? Do you think it's true? Now, my sister Gina was in here. She would have her thoughts on that, and maybe she'll join us here a little bit later. Now, so let's give it a. Okay, now this is kind of rich. Before I go into tasting, let's find out exactly what we're dealing with here. I have some information on this wine. I'm going to let it breathe a little bit more. I have pulled up some pricing on this because the pricing is interesting. I was looking this up at wine.com, and they had it going for $32.99 a bottle, which I thought was pretty pricey. And that's what I see right here, $32.99. I also, let me see what I have here for Vivino. This is, well, Target, I have a Target, they have it for $24.99 on their website here. So that I thought was also a little bit pricey. And Vivino has it for $18.91 for this bottle and $18.99 at Total Wine, or as I affectionately call it, Total Wino. And the Total Wine, $18.99 seems like a fairly decent price, but I'll tell you what I got it for. I've been seeing it at Sam's Club, and I have a receipt here, and I picked it up at Sam's for $10.98. That's $10.98 for this bottle. So I think, did I get a good bargain? I don't know. We're going to find out here in just a moment. But I just wanted to point that out before we started getting into it, just to see if it's really worth $10 or if it's worth $24 or $32. I don't know if it's worth $32. Let me see. Very berry, very, very berry wine, as they said. I can smell the berry notes in it quite a bit. Very strong on the berries. Whoa. Oh, boy. Yeah, this is a little on the sweet side for me. Now, I prefer dry reds. I prefer dry reds, and this, right off the bat, that's the first thing I notice. This wine is kind of sweet. So I wasn't really prepared for that. I mean, I'd heard that it might be a little bit on the sweet side, but I wasn't quite prepared for that. So I'm going to get another taste here. Okay, some mild tannins in it. I'll say that right off the bat. It does have some mild tannins. It is smoky. It does have a smoky flavor to it, or smoky taste to it. I have to say that I'm not really getting the vanilla. I'm not really getting the vanilla too much on this, but I am getting... there is an oakiness to it, that, you know, definitely. And I think the flavors are a little bit, in a way, the flavors are a little bit overwhelming on the first few tastes. So let me try a little bit more. As I've said so many times in the past, to really get a good taste for the wine, you sort of have to get down into the bottle. But to be honest, I don't know if I can go too far down in this bottle tonight because it's a little bit too sweet for my taste, to be honest. I mean, it's not syrupy sweet. It's not like some of the whites I've had that are like really, really sweet. It's I would say it's definitely not a dry red. It's kind of a semi, I don't know. It's kind of sweet. To be honest, I'm not really sure what to make of it right now. Because the sweet part, the sweetness of it is really it kind of threw me off right away. So I really wasn't concentrating on the actual flavors in there. It's just something that, so let's see what's in here. Now it does kind of have some floral, notes to it. It really does. It's very fruity. It's very jammy. It's quite jammy. It is. And which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just jammy and then the sweetness of it. I think that the sweetness kind of throws me off. But now, once again, it's not syrupy sweet. It's not like, which is why I'm pouring some more. But it is, it's a little bit sweeter than I'm used to. And a little bit It's a bit sweet for my taste, to be honest. Let's see what else is going on. Let me get back to the chat for just a moment. Anything else? Has anyone else tried this wine? Has anyone else tried this Cooper and Thief wine? I know it's been out for quite a while. And I, once again, I've walked by it back and forth at Sam's Club in the aisle every time. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know. It's such a mainstream wine. And I like to get wines that I haven't tried before that are maybe not necessarily so mainstream, not, you know, that you don't see everywhere. Some things that are different. And, well, this is definitely different for me. I'm getting a little hint of the vanilla right now. But it's, once again, I guess I'm still not over the sweetness part of the wine. Really not, because I'm used to drier wines, very dry wines. So we'll see how this shakes out. I'm glad I have this bottle of water with me, because that sweet wines can tend to give me a headache, and if I drink a lot of them, if I drink more than a glass or so. So I've got the water with me to cut that a little bit, I think. Let's see who else is in. Anybody in the YouTube? No. Okay, we've got watching in the YouTube chat, but no comments. Speak up. Let me know what you're drinking. Tell me what's going on. I wasn't expecting to be quite this sweet, to be honest. Not that I'm really disappointed in the wine. It's actually kind of tasty, but it's not. And it is very, very jammy. The tannins, I think if there were more tannins in this wine, I think it would help. They're tannins, but they're mild. Let's see what it pairs with as far as food is concerned. That should be interesting, because I have heard that it's supposed to pair well with red meats. Now, I have lamb here, and we'll see how it works with lamb. And I had some lamb for dinner. And this was actually a very good lamb. The dog liked it a lot. We gave him the bones. So we'll try it with a little lamb. They're cold cuts now because they're in the fridge. It does bring out the flavor of the lamb. It really does. So it would probably be okay with the lamb. If you want something that's going to accentuate the flavor of the lamb. Now, some people don't like lamb. I happen to like lamb. And I think the smokiness of this, and maybe the sweetness a little bit, sort of helps bring out the flavor of the lamb. So I think that it would probably work very well. It does work very well with lamb. It really does bring out the flavor somewhat. I'm not sure I really want to try it with a cheese yet. We'll see. And I don't know if it's going to work with the olives. We'll see. Chris says, sweet reds are tough. I'm not a huge fan, but I will usually take a sweeter red over a sweet white. Yeah, you know what, Chris? I think I'm with you on that. I like the dry reds, but if I was going to have a sweet wine, I think I'd go with a sweet red before I'd go with a sweet white wine. Because the whites, for me, when the whites are sweeter, they tend to get really, really sweet, like almost syrupy sweet, and I really can't take that too much. He says, can you taste the bourbon-aged aspect at all? Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of smokiness comes in. I think that's, yes. That's where, you know, because there's kind of an oaky taste, but in the bourbon aged aspect of it. I think that's really, really what's giving a lot of its smoky flavor. But and it's not bad. I kind of like the smoky part because I kind of like those kind of smoky tastes. But it would be nicer if it was just a little bit drier, just for me. That's just my own taste. Now, you might like it. You might think it's much, much better. But it's okay. It's okay. Dee has joined us in the chat. Great to see you, Dee. Stick around and tell me what you're drinking or not drinking or what you like to be drinking. I say that a lot on stream because I want to know what you're doing. I want to know how you're doing. Some of my friends, they check in and I haven't talked to them for a little while. I haven't seen them for a while. I definitely want to catch up with you and see how you're doing. I'm going to try this. I'm going to clear my palate here with a little bit of a cracker. This is just a Ritz. I'm going to have a little bit of water. And then we'll have a little bit more of the wine. Now, I don't know how much of this I can drink. And yes, I have been known to go into fairly far into a bottle. I have been known... I'm putting the wrong thing down. I haven't had that much. I have been known to finish a bottle or two. In fact, I did that on the very first wine stream. And I think that's why most everyone tuned in to watch it, was to see me drink the whole bottle. And a good time was had by all. I will say that. Now, there are a couple of things I would like to go before I go too much farther with the reviews, because we'll cover the wine throughout the stream here. But I wanted to make note of birthdays. Birthdays this week. I want to toast, because that's what I like to do. This is a good excuse to drink wine, right? To toast birthdays. And this week, I want to toast little Sadie, first of all, little Sadie. She's 2 years old. I know she's not old enough to drink, but I'm old enough to drink, and I'm going to toast her. Sadie is the daughter of my friend and coworker Taylor, where I work, my day job, and she's a cutie. She really is. I'm talking about Sadie's a cutie, okay? Let's see. Maybe I have had enough of this. Anyway, Taylor is the one who made these buttons for me. She is the button gnome. Taylor makes my drink with Rick buttons, and she does a fabulous job on that. She's made some for Tommy, too, for his Cube Command podcast. I have one of those up here, too. And she does a great job on these. In fact, if you need some promotional items, and buttons are actually a really good promotional item, and I'm not being paid to promote this or anything. It's just that I really like her work, and I appreciate what she's done for me on that. But if you need some promotional items, buttons are good items to have, and they're actually fairly inexpensive, and she does a great job with them. But you can check her out. She has an Etsy page. She's on Etsy, so I think it would be etsy.com/buttongnome, like a yard gnome, G-N-O-M-E, but button gnome. So she has a pretty good turnaround time, and she'll take real good care of her. In fact, tell her I sent you over. She'll take really good care of you. She does an excellent job on those. Also, and I've got to refill the glass a little bit because we're going to be toasting birthdays here, right? I don't have any anniversaries to toast this week, I don't think. Not that I can recall. But I do want to toast a birthday for a very special friend of mine. Okay, all my friends are special. Let me get this out of the way right now. All my friends are special. And everyone here in the chat is special and important to me. And, Sherrod, Rob, of course, my wife, Chi, Chris, Dee, everyone. And I really do appreciate you tuning in and watching me, watching to see if I'll finish this bottle or not. But I do want to toast a special friend of mine. We go way back to WOFL many, many years ago. And this is for Jeff, my good friend Jeff Pierce. Jeff is a really cool guy. And he and his wife, Zita, have known them for a long time. Haven't seen them for a while. It's been a long time since I've seen them. But he and I worked together at WFL in the film department. And we worked together with another friend of mine, Pete Moltak, who passed away some years ago, not long after she and I got married. And she had the opportunity to get to know Pete and Jeff. And Tia, one of the last times I saw Jeff actually was when Tia was born. So it's been a long, long time. It was just after Tia was born. And I do recall seeing him, having Tia go, taking Tia to go over to meet him and some of my friends at WOFL. And, Jeff and I even went into business for a while. Jeff and Pete and I, the three of us, went into business for a while back in the early 80s selling computer software. Now, one thing about Jeff, he's really good at what he does. One thing about Jeff is that he is a magician. I have not had enough of this yet, okay? Maybe it's the sweet wine, I don't know. But Jeff is also an accomplished magician, talented magician. And he has a website, I think it's jeffpiercemagic.com. He's actually written a couple of books on magic. And so he's quite good at it. I know that he's entertained us on occasion years back. And so this is for Jeff, my good friend Jeff. Happy birthday, buddy. And I hope you have many, many, many more. Let's see what else we have here. You know, I was going to pull up the national days today and I forgot to do that. So let's see, let's check real quick and see what we have for national days. Cause I know I have that national day calendar because we have to toast a few national days coming up this week. I'll pull up the calendar at a day. I'm at nationaldaycalendar.com actually, just for full disclosure. And I'm pulling up the national days for the end of this month for August. And it looks like we have, towards the end of the month, we have, what's today, the 27th? Oh, no, it's 24th. Okay. Today is, and it's almost, the day's almost over, as a matter of fact, National Maryland Day. Okay, should we toast National Maryland Day? I have friends in Maryland. And in fact, they're not in here tonight, but sometimes they come in. But they live in Maryland, and I'll toast National Maryland Day. National Maryland Day. National Peach Pie Day. I had no idea there was a national day for peach pie. Now, you know, I like peaches. It's not my favorite fruit. Cherries are my favorite fruit. Blueberries are very close. Cherries and blueberries. I love cherries and blueberries. And I think that's one reason why I like a lot of the dry wines, you know, like the Cabs and the Tempranillos and things like that. You know, the ones that have a lot of the cherry taste in them. And some of the red blends, the, like the ones that blend a Cab or a Merlot with a Syrah or a Mourvèdre or something like that. And you get the strong cherry flavors in there. But I will have a tendency to gravitate towards a lot of those because of the strong cherry notes in them, because I love cherry. And blueberry's another favorite of mine. National Peach Pie Day. I've had... When was the last time I had a peach pie? I've had peaches. I had a peach a couple of weeks ago. What the heck. I'll just toast National Peach Pie Day. Okay. What's next here? National Waffle Day. Today was National Waffle Day. I did not have waffles for breakfast. I had some beef bacon for breakfast. We had some... hash browns and eggs and other things, but I did not have a waffle. Maybe we'll have it tomorrow. Well, maybe we'll celebrate National Waffle Day after the fact. Here's a National Waffle Day. I love a good waffle, by the way. So here's a National Waffle Day. What's coming up tomorrow? August 25th, National Park Service Founders Day, National Whiskey Sour Day. Okay, I'll drink to that. I'll drink to that. National Whiskey Sour Day. National Secondhand Wardrobe Day. Okay. National Kiss and Makeup Day. You know, I've been married for over 25 years, and I can really appreciate a National Kiss and Makeup Day. National Banana Split Day. Okay, now I've got a story about that, and that could take me well over an hour. But when my early days working at Disney, I think I've talked about this before. In my early days of Disney, I worked in the Borden Cone Shop. My first week or two was in the Borden Cone Shop on Main Street at Walt Disney World in Orlando. And then after that, I was moved to my regular position that was originally hired for, because I was training in the Magic Kingdom. I was moved into the position I was hired to be in the Veranda Restaurant Pavilion at the Walt Disney World Village. Which, of course, over the years has changed names and everything. And so now it's, I don't know, it was Disney Marketplace and it was all kinds of things. Oh, whatever. It was in Lake Buena Vista Village. But it was the Walt Disney World Village at the time. And it was part of a complex. There was the Borden Cone Shop in the front and then the Veranda Restaurant in the middle and then the Sara Lee Bakery in the end. And for a while there, I was even a lead of the Cone Shop and the Sara Lee Bakery, which were on separate ends of the restaurant. I'd have to run back and forth between them to give people breaks and all that kind of stuff and manage the two. One of the things I did in the Cone Shop and for the Veranda Restaurant is I used to make ice cream sundaes, all the ice cream treats, ice cream sundaes and the banana splits. And we used to make, I spent a lot of time digging into ice cream and making banana splits, but I was pretty fast at it. I got it down to a science where I could really make these things quickly, because you had to. I mean, when you're talking about Disney World, you're talking about thousands of people there every day and lots of people in the restaurant and a very high turnover rate for the tables. You really had to be quick. You had to be on your feet. So I had to really just make them quick. And I remember making a lot of banana splits in my day. I was so sick of ice cream when I left that operation. I was so sick of ice cream. I couldn't eat ice cream for 2 or 3 years. I was just so tired of it. I could not smell it. I could not look at it. I was just so sick of it. And it took me a long time to get back into eating ice cream again. Now I do love ice cream. I really do. But just working with it for 8 or 9 hours a day, every day, and just scooping thousands and thousands of cones and scoops and, you know, whatever of ice cream. It just, it gets to you after a while. It really does. So, that was, what the heck, I'll drink to that. And it's time to refill my glass again. So people are asking me, okay, you know, you worked at Disney and you worked at WFL and you had a whole career as an IT person. You know, you ran your own computer store and now you're doing, what are you doing now? I'm basically kind of the marketing guy for the company I work for now. And you do podcasting and you're a YouTuber and all this kind of stuff. It's like, where'd you have find time to fit this all in? You know, where did you really do all this stuff? And yeah, I did. I've done a lot of different things in my life. I really have. And it's interesting because a lot of these things I did were not very, very short-term things. Now, there were a few things that I did that were short-term. There were some, I think my first real job was working at a place in the Altamont Mall in Altamont Springs, Florida. It was just after the Altamont Mall opened, and it was a steakhouse. And I think I worked there for about a month. And bussing tables and things like that, doing dishes. And my first real job, and I was about, I don't know, about 17 or so. And it was, I was just kind of, it didn't last very long because it was, I don't think I was really ready for it, prepared for it. And the company was not very well run, so they went out of business soon after. And that was food service. And I really wasn't looking after that. It really didn't, food service didn't impress me as a career. And of course, for some people it is a career. And it, you know, there's a lot to be said for people who work in food service. And I have a lot of respect for people who do that, waiters and waitresses and people who do that because it's a hard job. It really is. But I didn't, it was not something I wanted to make a career in. But my first job at Disney, when I went to work at Disney, that was my second real job. And I went to work for Disney because I had high aspirations. I had high hopes because at the time I was really heavily into filmmaking. I was an amateur filmmaker. I was making Super 8 films and 8mm films and, you know, dabbling in that sort of thing and editing and a little animation and that kind of thing. No, really, seriously. I made some little animated films when I was younger. And I belonged to a film club, a high school film club. And later on, the Orlando Film Club, the Cinematography Club of Orlando, which later became the Association of Cinematic Arts. So I did a lot of that. I was really, really into film. And my original ambition was to go to Hollywood and be the next Steven Spielberg, the next George Lucas, you know, that kind of thing. Pipe dreams. Big ambitions. So I thought that maybe by joining Disney, I could get a little bit of an insight, maybe move up in there and move my way around and see what I could find out about the Disney organization because I had always had a fascination with Walt Disney. Walt Disney, when I was a kid, Walt Disney was one of my heroes. I saw him as a very successful filmmaker, a very successful storyteller, a very successful inventor because Walt Disney had invented a lot of different things. He invented the multiplane animation camera. He invented, he helped develop, and a lot of people don't know this, but he helped develop the Technicolor process, which brought us color. He really did. He helped develop the Technicolor process. He helped develop a lot of different things in film through history. He created the first sound animated film. He created the first feature-length animated film. He did a lot of very, very innovative things in his life and built this company. And I was just enamored. I was just enamored with that. He really, really impressed me. So he was kind of my hero. I even did a term paper on him once, Walt Disney, because I was just so impressed with his accomplishments. And so obviously, naturally, I wanted to become part of that. And of course, he passed away in 1966 of cancer, I believe. And, you know, he, but he inspired me. And I thought, well, you know, I would really love to work for the Disney organization because it sounds like a really good, wholesome place to work. I was a very naive kid. Come on. I was really naive. So I went to work at Disney. And of course, I had the rude awakening fairly quickly, realizing that, oh, you know, it's not exactly what I thought it was going to be. I didn't mean to get into a long thing about Disney, but I was a very naive kid. I was a very naive kid for a long time. Had a lot of rude awakenings. But from Disney, I worked at Disney for 9 years, and I did a lot of different things. I didn't just work in food service. I did a lot of other different things, some outdoor stuff and banquets and crowd control and some other stuff. And I worked at Epcot for a while. I watched Epcot being built. I worked at Epcot for... I watched it being built, and originally I was excited about Epcot because Disney's original vision for Epcot was, that's what it was. Epcot was an acronym for Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow, Epcot. And the original concept that he had for it was as a city of the future where people would actually live. Now, it would be a Disney run. It'd be like a company-run city, but it was a city where people could actually live and work. That was the concept. Now, when Disney died and the corporation, you know, the board of directors kind of took over and Roy Disney managed it, you know, his brother Roy managed it for a while, and then he passed away, and of course it changed hands, you know, as far as CEO is concerned, a few times. As that happened, as that evolved, the whole concept of the community of tomorrow, the city of tomorrow, just dissolved and became a theme park. Because they were saying, well, you know, we can't afford to build a city and have people live in it. We got to make money off of it. And I think this is kind of where Disney went into their, started to evolve into the corporate mindset that it is today, where it's all about money, where it's all about money. And they changed the whole concept. They changed everything about his original city concept and turned it into a theme park. But I watched this thing being built, and you know, I was disappointed because I thought, you know, someday I'd like to live in Epcot. This sounds really cool. When Disney first pitched it, and he first pitched it on television, you know, primetime television as a community of tomorrow. I thought, you know, I was a little kid then. I thought, well, I'd love to live at Disney, at Epcot. And then when they changed it and made it a theme park, I was disappointed, but I was saying, well, you know, I could still work there. And I did. I worked there a little bit. And it was a fun theme park. I enjoyed it as a theme park. But I really became, over the years, very disillusioned with the company and with, especially behind the scenes, a lot of the way things were run. And it got to the point where I said, you know, maybe this isn't where I want to go at all. So And at the same time, I was getting a little disillusioned with the whole aspect of Hollywood or going to Hollywood, because I thought, you know, maybe I could finish my film degree and go off to Hollywood and do that stuff. But I was really getting disillusioned with the whole aspect of it. So I decided, you know, I think I just want to stay in Orlando. The next Hollywood East, as they were calling it in the early 90s. Or actually late 80s, they were calling it Hollywood East. And at that point, the early 80s, that was when I said, you know what, I think I want to work for WFL. Because I had grown up with WFL. I was watching Star Trek, and I'd come home from school, and I'd, instead of doing my schoolwork, I'd be watching reruns of Star Trek and Gilligan's Island and whatever else was on at the time. Those days, Adam's Family and things like that. And, you know, I thought, you know, it'd be fun to work in a television station. I'd like to get into television. So when I was working at Disney still, I really said, you know, maybe that's what I should do. Maybe I should just move and try to get into television, get into broadcasting. That's what I like to do, because I liked radio and TV and that sort of thing. So that's what I did. I pursued the local TV station, WOFL in Orlando, and it took me a little while to get in. But I got to know the people there, got to know Carl Carden and some of the people there that were working there at the time. And they had a job opening at some point, and they hired me in, and I got right in. And because of my past experience with editing film, they said, oh, okay, you know, that's easy. We put you in the film department. And that's how I met Jeff. And that's how I met Pete Moltak. And Pete had just started like a month or two before I did. And I think Jeff had been already been there for a year or two. But that's what we were. We were the film department. And I was getting into editing film. And they didn't really have to train me much for film editing. It was because I had done it on my own for editing my own 8mm films and that sort of thing. And then, of course, we were editing on 16mm, but it's just a larger gauge, so it wasn't that big of a deal. I knew how to use the editing equipment. I knew the concepts of editing, the aesthetic concepts of editing. And having done my own stuff and having studied this quite a bit. So, you know, I went and started editing film. And then when we moved to video, when the station moved to doing everything on video, Jeff actually started, he was doing a lot of the initial editing on video, because we had like one, we had a couple 1-inch tape machines that he was editing with. And I was Pete and I were still editing on film, but I was tapped to do all the transfers, because I was rather very, very meticulous about a lot of the stuff I did. So they tapped me in particular to go do a lot of the film to video transfers, because they wanted the highest quality transfers possible. So I would do the film to video transfers on the film chain down there in master control. And that's what I did a lot of for a long time, was I transferred pretty much the entire film library to video. And I did a lot of editing of both along the way. So, later on down the road, Chris Wolf, Chris, who was our program and promotion director at the time, he gave us opportunities to do voice work. It was something else that I really wanted to do for a long time. So Pete and I used to write and produce voiceovers. We'd write voiceovers and we'd perform them. And I would do a lot of the voice work. I started doing a lot of the voice work there. And I even did voices for commercials and promos and things like that. Did a lot of did some character voices, things like that. Yeah, you know, a lot of things you don't know about me. So from there, at some point, the station was purchased by Meredith. It was really cool, and we became a Fox affiliate. We became a very, very respected Fox affiliate. We were 24th in the market at one point, and then we kept moving our way up, and we were one of the highest rated Fox affiliates in the country. And at some point, I think Meredith was looking to downsize and start bringing in news, to the point where they wanted to bring in news because Fox wanted to really expand and do news. Then they had to let some of us go. So because I was one of the last people to be hired, they kind of did it by hire date. So I was let go. But they were really, really good to me. And a lot of people there helped me out. And when I was hired back to do various projects, I was hired back to do things per diem and to work on special events and things like that. But they also helped me get situated in another startup that was starting up, WRBW, Channel 65. So I went to work for Channel 65, and I worked there for a couple of years. And from there, I did a lot more voice work. And then that's where I really got into doing audio production, because I would do some of the voice work. And then the owner's sister would do, well, she was doing a lot of the voice work too, but I would produce a lot of it for her. And then I would produce, and then they hired someone else from one of the local radio stations to do some of the voice stuff. And then I would some of the voiceovers and things like that. And then I would produce for him. So they kind of, because I was really the only person there who knew how to use the audio, they had bought all this used audio equipment. They had bought this huge sound. I think it was a Mackie. It was a huge Mackie mixer and soundboard. And they had some reel-to-reel equipment. They had some digital equipment there. Was just starting to come in, and nobody knew how to use it. I was the only person that knew how to use this stuff. So they tapped me. They had me take over that. So I ran all of that stuff. I ran the boards, and I did all of the audio production, and did the. Now, I did some production work, some other things too. I produced a Sunday morning cartoon thing and some other stuff. But they had me primarily tapped into doing this, the audio work. And then I would fill in and do a lot of the voice work when for some of the other stuff that had to be done, like character voices and things like that. So I was doing that for a while. So I was basically the audio engineer for the station. And then they sold the station, so I was let go from that. And then at that point, I said, you know what, I'm kind of tired of doing this. I want to be in business for myself. And that's kind of about the time that I decided, you know what, I've loved computers for so many years. It was something I did on the side for fun. I got my A+ certification for working on computers. And I said, let me just open up my own store. I did some support work for third-party support work for Dell and Gateway for a while. And then I decided, you know what, let me just start my own. I want to start my own computer store. And that's what I did. I opened up my own computer store and did that for about a decade. So, and I want to say, let me check the chat here. Charles is in the chat. Charles, it's great to see you in the chat. It's good to see you. How are things going with your new job now? You just started something new recently. I don't want to get too specific if you don't want me to, but I just want to say thanks, you know, for coming in. And how's it going down there? I hope you're doing all right. I hope you and your wife are both doing well, and the family. And let me know how things are going with you. It's good. It's good to see you. What we're doing is we're opening and reviewing, tasting the Copper and Thief Cellar Master Red Wine Blend. This is something that's common, that's been around for a while, but it's something that I have not tried until today, because it was on a recommendation from someone that I met over at one of our local house concerts a couple months back. Mark and Kathy Miller, they do house concerts. They're really, really nice. They're great people. And they also actually make their own wine on the side. So I like to go down and see them sometimes. Sometimes they come over and see us. And we drink wine and we have a good time. But Mark and Kathy, they have renovated their whole backyard to doing house concerts. So they'll have like once a month, sometimes a couple times a month, they'll have people over, and they'll have artists that they've vetted, checked out, that they really like, will come over and do a concert. I think, were they having one tonight? I think they were. But, and I couldn't make it because I'm doing the wine stream tonight. But there are, it's always a lot of fun. They have, they usually have a lot of wine there too. Sometimes I bring over a bottle to contribute. Chia often will make some of her famous roasted famous in the neighborhood roasted peanuts and sometimes other desserts and snacks over there, and we sit down and we listen to some great music. It's a great time. Anyway, the last time I was down there, it was a couple of months ago, I met a lady named Charlotte. She calls herself Charlotte from Charlotte because she lives in Charlotte. Yeah, of course. And Charlotte, if you're watching, this is for you. In fact, you know what? I need to toast you. This is for Charlotte and Charlotte from Charlotte. So I was telling her about the wine stream, and she said, well, have you tried the Cooper and Thief wine? I said, no, I haven't. I've seen it around, but I haven't tried it. And she said, you have to try it. That would be perfect for your wine stream. If you haven't tried it, she said, I love the Cooper and Thief wine. It's just fabulous. It's great. It's my favorite wine. If you haven't tried it, you have to try it. So may I suggest, and request that you try it out on your wine stream and review it. Well, you know, I had a lot of other wines because, you know, I usually go down to Wine Store in Blakeney. And Thursday nights they have their wine tastings. And I like to go down there and do the wine tasting. So usually I'll try something that tastes, and I'll, oh, well, this is nice. Or the ladies down there, like Trish, well, she'll recommend a certain particular wine. She says, why don't you try this for your wine stream? And so I'll say, yeah, I'll try that. So I kept meaning to try this out, but I kept pushing it back and pushing it back because I had all these other wines to try. In fact, I have a couple other wines that we need to taste out. This Overstone is one that we need to open one of these days. It's a very interesting. It's a white, but it is, I believe this is a New Zealand wine, if I remember correctly. And this should be very, very citrusy. New Zealand wines are known to be very citrusy wines. And, you know, I now that I'm thinking about it, I misspoke on an earlier wine stream when I was saying, oh, yeah, the wines from Australia are all citrusy. And that's not what I meant. I meant to say New Zealand wines because that's what they are. These are very citrusy wines. This, as a matter of fact, this one is supposed to taste a lot like grapefruit, which should be interesting. So maybe we'll open that. I don't know. Maybe we'll open that one next week. I'm not a big white wine guy, but this one, when I did a tasting on this months ago, yeah, it's been sitting there for several months. nothing wrong with that. Wine's supposed to keep. A good wine is supposed to keep for a while. But, we probably should. It's probably about time to open that up and taste it up. Taste it. Review it. Anyway, where was it going? She recommended, Charlotte from Charlotte recommended The Cooper and Thief. So I got to the point where I didn't pick up a wine in particular for this week's wine stream. So I said, why not? Why don't I just go? It's time. Why don't I just go ahead? I promised her I would. I like to keep my promises. I don't like to break a promise to anybody. So I said, well, you know, let me go ahead and try it. So I'm trying it, and it's interesting. As we go farther down into the bottle, and Charles, you're probably laughing at me right now, right? You're really far into this bottle, aren't you? Well, actually, let me see how far we're on. I'll pull up the light. I'm not quite halfway. I'm about a third of the way in. A little over a third of the way into the bottle. Not quite halfway into it. But I am pouring some. Look, it's a sweet wine. I'm not saying sweet, but it's kind of sweet. A little bit sweeter than I would like for my taste, because I really prefer really dry reds, or fairly semi-dry reds. But this is kind of a sweet wine. But I'll tell you what, and I'm going to feel this in the morning. I really am. If it's a sweet wine especially, I'm going to feel this in the morning. Sweet wines don't really... sweet wines don't agree with me too much. Where was going with this? It is starting to kick in a little bit, and at this point, you notice that I'm drinking and not complaining. Not that I was really complaining before. It's very, very jammy. Kind of a berry. It's an interesting berry mix. Mix of several berries. I do get a little bit of the vanilla in it, but it's very smoky. It's smoky, a little tannic. I tell you what, they say they're light tannins or mild tannins in it. It's not as tannic as I would like, especially as sweet as it is. I would like to, it's not as tannic as I like, but it's there, and I have to have a little bit more of this water because... I'm going to really feel this tomorrow morning if I don't. Yes. And I'm probably going to need more water than this. So, where was it going with this? I don't remember now. Yeah, it's starting to kick in pretty well. Well, I was talking about my days in television broadcasting. I was working at WRBW, and then when they sold the station, they pretty much let us all go. We were there long enough to get the station up and running to where they wanted to sell it, and then they pretty much let most of us go, including me. I did, for a brief stint, try to get back into broadcasting, back into radio. It kind of, I kind of wanted to get into radio more, but it got to the point where I was in my mid-40s, and there is a glass ceiling, or there's a kind of a glass ceiling for age in some of these businesses. They want young people. They don't want really people who are getting older or midlife, people in their midlife. And it got to the point where I was going to some of these job interviews. Now, the thing is, I had a good resume. I had a great resume. I had the qualifications, no doubt. I had the qualifications. So I would go in and say, sure, they would call me in for interviews. In fact, I would send my resumes around, and I'd get called up for interviews. The problem is, when I'd go into the interview, and I would go into the, you know, to the waiting area, I would see all these young blonde female interns waiting to pick up the same kind of jobs. And the guy that was interviewing would be like a, I don't know, late 20, early 30 something guy. And my first thought would be, you know what, I'm not going to get this job. There is no way I'm going to get this job. And that's what happened. And you know, maybe it doesn't sound politically correct at all, but that was the truth about it. That's the dirt on it. I mean, you know, they didn't want some middle-aged balding guy working for them when they had all these beautiful young female interns, and the guy was a young, you know, 28-32-year-old guy calling the shots. So I kind of, after a couple of those, I said, you know what, this is ridiculous. I'm not even going to try for that. So that's when I went into saying, well, what else am I going to do? And that's when I said, you know what, there's a guy building computers down here. And I said, you know, I could sell some computers. I had an interest in computers for a long time. I could sell them. But I saw how much money he was making selling these computers. I thought, whoa, maybe this is it. Maybe this is where I should be. So I started selling his computers. The thing is, though, the computers were basically crap. He was putting in a lot of substandard stuff in his computers. And I found that out the hard way because some of the people I was selling computers to would call me up and say, hey, this has problems. And it wasn't my computer. I didn't build it. This guy did. And he really wasn't really inclined to support the computers that he sold. He was inclined to just sell them and just move on and disappear. So that was a point where I said, you know what, if I'm going to sell computers, I have to build them. I've got to back it up. And I don't know what he's putting into them, but I've got to do this right. So I started building the computers myself and selling them. And that was really kind of how I got into the computer business, because I was selling computers. I was building and selling computer systems. The thing is, at that point, there wasn't really enough money in just building systems. People wanted you to go over and maintain systems and work on their networks and maintain their networks. And I realized, well, you know, I was going to need a little bit more training in some of this. So that's what I did. And I got some training, got some experience in that, and then said, you know, I'm going to get into my own business doing IT work. So I went full-fledged into IT work, and it was never my intention to do IT. That was not really what I wanted to do. I wanted to start a business building computers and just selling computers and then let other people hire other people to do that for me. But that's not exactly the way it happened. The way it turned out was that I wound up being the tech guy all the time and going off and working on people's computers and repairing systems and doing networking and stuff. Now, that was really not what I wanted to do at all. So I was really not very happy doing it, but I knew I needed to. And it was bringing in some money. It was bringing in the revenue at the time. And so that's what I did. And at some point I decided to open my own computer store, and I was doing okay with that. The first 9 months that I was open, I was actually, in fact, you know, lots of times it takes 2 or 3 years to really start showing a profit. And I was in my computer store, I was there for the first 6 months. I was showing a really, really nice profit. And things were looking really great. And then that was in 2000. When 9/11 hit. The day that 9/11 hit, we were going to close down the computer store for about a week or so while we went on vacation We're just going to take a much-needed vacation that we hadn't had for a long time. 9/11 hit that week, and then everything just crashed. Everything just crashed. And people weren't buying anything. People weren't buying computers. And people weren't, you know, it was a lot of uncertainty. And all the profit, everything that I had saved, that I had built, I wound up having to basically support myself on for to live and work off of for the next year and a half because of that. And it was kind of a struggle. It was kind of an uphill struggle from that. In fact, I was one of the few computer stores open in the area that I was open in. And I had downsized a little bit, but people were coming in. Other people who were competitors of mine were coming in looking for work, coming in to work for me, looking for work. And I couldn't hire them. There wasn't enough work that I could give them. So, because I was struggling too. But I saw a lot of my competitors just fold and close up in that first year, right after 9/11 hit. And from there, it was kind of an uphill struggle. But I started to recover, but by that time, I was kind of burnt out on it because I was everything. I was the IT guy. I was the marketing guy. I was the billing guy. I was handling all the financial stuff. I was doing everything. Because it was a one man operation, and I was getting a little burned out on it because it was not what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was I wanted to start a business, run it, hire other people to run the business, and let them do that, and just let me kind of handle the top end business stuff. That was what I really wanted to do. And that's not what happened. I wound up being it. And because of that, I just burned me out. And I got tired of it. I said, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I'd been doing this for about 10, 12 years. And then she said, let's move. Let's wipe the slate clean and start over. Let's move from Orlando to Charlotte. And, you know, and at first I'd resisted it because Orlando had been my home for 35 years. I was born in Florida. I was born in Gainesville. I was born in Florida. Florida was my home. And I lived in North Carolina for 10 years when I was a kid, but I never liked it. And never had really good experiences there. But Florida had always been my home. And it was very hard to leave. It was a very tough decision to make. But at that point, I was so burned out on everything. And I knew that we needed a change. And I had some health issues, too, because I had some allergies that were really just taking over. And to the point where the doctor was saying that, you know what, you're going to have to go to shots. And I didn't want that. So at that point, you know, she said, let's move. She found herself a good job up in North Carolina. And, you know, and I said, at that point, I just said, you know what? Maybe that's the best thing. Maybe that's what we need. And that's what we did. And we've been up here for 12 years. And you know what? I tell you what. And that's one reason why I love my wife, because it was her insight, her fortitude for that sort of thing, her determination it really got us through a lot of that, and her faith in a lot of that, and without getting too specific, but I developed a whole new respect and admiration for my wife, for that. We had a tough time making that move from Orlando to North Carolina. And I wasn't sure how we were going to do it, but she made it happen. And when we got up here, and the first year and a half was kind of tough, but when I finally got situated, and now I'm in a job that I love. It's kind of like my dream job. I love the job that I have now. I'm very, very happy there. The people are great. The people I work with are great. The people I work for are great. It's an awesome experience. And I'm doing all the things that I enjoy doing. I'm doing, I'm podcasting. I'm a YouTuber. I'm doing blogging. I'm doing a lot of writing. I'm doing a lot of other things that I love to be doing. And I realize and also, all of my experiences, my previous life experiences have been kind of a culmination of where I am today. I realize that if I hadn't done a lot of the things that I did before, Disney, WFL, WRBW, working for third-party computer support companies, working for, having my own computer business to learn how the business side works and how retail works and support, and getting into podcasting and learning how all that works. If I hadn't done all of that, if all of my experience, my previous life experience, there's probably no way that I would be where I am right now, in the job and where I am at this point. And it's a culmination of all that life experience that has really given me a richness and a place where I am right now. This move to Charlotte 12 years ago. No, I'm not a big fan of the city of Charlotte. I'll be honest with you. I've never really felt like I was part of Charlotte. But this move was the best thing that we could have done. And I have to say that my life is great. I like where we are now. We're in a good place. I hope we stay in a good place. I hope we're always in a good place. But I have to say that we are in a very good place. And I have to say, if it wasn't for all of my other life experience, I never would have wound up here. Never. And I guess if there's any lesson to this, and as you know, this is kind of a stream of consciousness kind of show. So that's what I'm doing, a stream of consciousness. I had some notes here. As a matter of fact, I had some show notes. I'm not going to follow them because it's getting late. It's 12:30 now. It's time for us to close the stream. But I think this is kind of important in a way because the takeaway here is that when for a lot of people, and they're still, I guess, in my age, some of the people in my age are still wondering what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. Where am I with my life? And a lot of people that are frustrated with their lives. I think that if you look back on your previous life experiences, there are things that you can do with your life experiences that can bring you to a new place. And I don't want to sound like I'm being preachy or anything like that, but as a motivational thing, look back on the things that you've done. And everyone has had accomplishments. I mean, most everyone that I know of has had some accomplishments in their life. Even if you're not happy with where you are now, if you're definitely not happy with where you are now, I think what you might want to try doing is looking back on where you've been and look at the culmination of your life experiences and say, you know what, where I've been, the things that I've done, the things that I know about my experience, my past experiences, what can I do with that to move forward to do something that's going to make me happy, that's going to make me productive, that's going to give my life some fulfillment, some meaning? And I think that if you do that, I think most everybody will find something, will find their place in life, to find some sort of fulfillment. I don't know if that really makes a lot of sense to some people, but I think to some other people that maybe are struggling. I know, Charles, you're in a good place right now, so I commend you for that. And your life experiences has brought you to that place. As a matter of fact, that's another example. The places that you've been, the things that you've done, everything there has culminated into giving you that next step to that next level of where you are now, and I believe where you really want to be. And for a lot of us, that's been the case. But for those of us who are still struggling, trying to figure out where their place is in life, and trying to figure out what the meaning to their life is, if you kind of look back and see where you've been and look at your life experiences. Now, I'm not talking about the negative stuff. There's been plenty of negative stuff in my life. And I'm not talking, and I haven't mentioned any of that. But I've focused on the positive, my life experiences. But if you go back and look at your life experiences, the positive stuff, where you've been, I think you can pull things from that to say, this is what I know, and maybe add a little bit to it. Maybe go to school, take an extra class, maybe do something else that adds to that experience to take you to another place that's maybe a better place that can help you achieve your ultimate goals and where you want to be, to get you where you want to be or where you feel comfortable being. Success, a lot of people think that success is just all money. It's like, well, I'm a success if I make $1 million here. Or I'm a success if I can take my experience here and become a great movie director or a great actor or actress or whatever. If I can be great at basketball or, do this, that. Success isn't necessarily in monetary terms, and a lot of people that's a misnomer. A lot of people think that successful people are successful if they make $1 million or more, or if they make a lot of money doing this, enough money to buy them a nice house and a nice cars and whatever. That's not what success is. Success is when you set a goal for yourself, whatever that goal is, whether it is to be the best line cook, to be the best chef, to be the best retailer, to be the best phone tech support person, to be the best chimney sweeper, to be the best at anything you want to be, and then you reach that pinnacle, you become that's success. And whether it makes money or not is irrelevant. Now, yeah, it's important in this society in the sense that you have to be able to support yourself and your family and that sort of thing. Yeah, I get that. I understand that. More than you think. I definitely understand that. There's so many people that are, say, into podcasting. They say, well, I want to be successful podcasting. In order to be a successful podcaster, I have to get sponsors and I have to make a lot of money because I want to be like somebody like John Lee Dumas, or I want to be somebody like you know, whoever that's making a lot of money, Leo Laporte or something like that. And I want to be a successful podcaster. I want to be like Mark Maron, you know, and make a lot of money doing podcasting and live and just be successful at that. That's not success. Success is if you take, you know what, I want to have the best podcast about managing diabetes. And, you know, I have a friend who has a podcast like that. She does very well with it. But you, if you create that podcast, and that's a podcast people are listening to. Whether it's making money or not, you don't have to have any sponsors. You don't have to be making any money at all with it. If you are good at what you're doing and people are listening to you and they trust you and they're saying, you know what, this is good content. This is a good podcast. I'm listening to this. If you are happy with what you're doing with the results of your podcast, that's success. If you can walk down the street and people say, you know, I've heard your podcast, or you get emails saying, I've heard your podcast, that's changed my life. That's helped me. You know, a podcast about people dealing with stress and people dealing with mental issues and people dealing with suicide, things like that. And let's take suicide, for instance. Somebody who's contemplating suicide, if you are someone who has prevented someone, you know, suicide hotline prevention, and you don't have to be making really any money at it. You're doing a service for somebody else. If you've prevented somebody from committing suicide, and you've helped them turn their life around and change their life, that's success. You have done something successful. You have helped someone. You have saved a life. You have helped someone better themselves and to turn their life around. That's success. If you have decided, you know what, I want to be a landscaper, and you're not making a lot of money at landscaping, but people respect what you do, and you're doing beautiful work at landscaping, and you love what you do. You love what you do. You go there every day, and you love what you're doing, that you have a sense of satisfaction with your job. That's success. That's what success is. You set a goal, say, I want to do this. I want to be a baker, a candlestick maker. And you're doing it, and you love what you're doing, and you're happy with what you're doing. You're there. You have reached your goal. You are a success. End of story. That's what it is. That's what success is. And you know what? I've done this this wine stream for 6 months now. More than that, actually, I think. I started in February, March, April, May, June, July. Yeah, 6 months. And it's not a large following, you know. I do it every week. But you know what? I'm having fun doing this. And I came into this saying, I want to have a good time. I want to have fun. When it stops being fun, I'm going to stop doing this podcast. When it stops being fun, I'm going to stop doing this wine stream. But you know what? I'm having fun doing this. I'm down halfway down the bottle of this. And I'm drinking wine, which I like to do anyway. I'm on a wine stream. I'm talking to my friends. Charles D. Chi, everybody, you know, everybody in this wine stream, Rob, all these people in the wine stream, you know, I haven't checked YouTube in a while, but There it is. This is YouTube. Nobody's going on YouTube. It's okay. I'm here with my friends are here. I'm here. We're having a good time with the wine stream. Even if I only have like 20, 30 people watching, even if I only have 4 or 5 people watching, if I'm talking to them, they're talking to me, we're having a good time. And I'm having a good time drinking this wine, just enjoying myself on a Saturday night. And that was my goal. That's success. And here's to success. That's my rant for the night. I was going to go on another different rant altogether, but I'm going to save that for another time because it's getting late. It's time to close things down. And it looks like we've probably overstayed my welcome there. If anybody's still watching, I know where people sign in. I don't know where they're signing out. Mark's in the chat, by the way. Mark is checking it out. Mark, it's great to see you. And actually, Mark is the guy I was talking about. My friends in Maryland, Mark and Junie. Mark and Junie, right. And I did toast Maryland, didn't I? Yes, I'll toast them again. Just for Mark and Junie. So, anyway, it's time to close down the chat, the stream for the night. And this, of course, gets repurposed into a podcast, the Drink with Rick podcast. You know, you can, you go to drinkwithrick.com. You can listen. If you don't have time, if you can't watch the live stream when it's live, you can always, if you just can't bear not hearing my voice for an hour and a half or so, it's going on 2 hours, which I said it was going to be a shorter one this week, but sorry, Chi. Sorry, honey. I went on. But we gave you my life story pretty much. You can always catch the podcast later. The podcast is at drinkwithrick.com. You can hear the podcast on Spotify. You can hear it on TuneIn, on Google Podcasts. You can hear it, of course, on it's not iTunes anymore. It's Apple Podcasts. Hear it on Apple Podcasts. You can hear it on Blueberry.com. Blueberry, run by Todd Cochran, which, you know, it's a much respected platform, one of the largest platforms for podcasts out there. And one that I like. That's my number one platform to go to. You can hear it on, you can hear just pretty much everywhere. You can hear it on the Alexa. If you have an Amazon Echo or Google Home, I think you say what? Google, okay, Google. Is that what you say? Tommy has a Google Home. He doesn't really use it that much anymore, but he has one. I think you say, okay, Google, play the Drink with Rick podcast. On Alexa, I have Alexa, an Amazon Echo speaker. You just say, Alexa, play the Drink with Rick podcast, and she should be able to play. If she doesn't, let me know because we have an issue, but she should be able to play it without too much prompting. Of course, as you can see down the screen below, you can contact me at rick@savoyamedia.com. I was going to set up a rick@drinkwithrick.com email. I might still do that at some point. I have so many email addresses right now that I really can't keep up with them myself. So the rick@savoyamedia.com is pretty much my catch-all. If you want to contact me there, you can definitely contact me. I'll get those emails at rick@savoyamedia.com. That's my main email. Yeah, you can still contact me at rick@theforcefield.net. Chris, if you're still watching, yes, rick@theforcefield.net is still active, as is rick@savoyamcomputer.com. I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep that one. That goes back to my computer business days. But I still have accounts that use SavoyaComputer.com, so that's why I still keep it active. At some point, I've got to move all that and shut that down. Anyway, so I'm going on. I want to say thank you to everyone who has stuck with me tonight and watched this. Once again, we're checking out the Cooper and Thief red wine blend. I'll tell you what, I shouldn't pour any more of this. Goodness. I keep pouring it. It's almost like a reactive thing. I don't know. I'm just going to finish this glass and I'm done. In fact, let me go ahead and toast all my friends who watched me tonight. Chris, Tiffany, Rob, Dee. Who else do I have in here? Sherrod, if you're still watching, Sherrod, I'm glad you joined me tonight. Here's to all of you. Toasting all of you. Thanks for joining me. Oh, Mark, too. I did toast you before, but I'll toast you again. Mark and Junie. All of you, my good friends, I do appreciate all of you. I want to say thank you for joining me in this. And my final review on this, it's okay. I can't say that I would buy more of these because I prefer dry reds, and this is kind of a, it's kind of a semi-sweet. It's not sweet, but it's kind of a semi-sweet. It's a little bit sweeter than I would prefer, but it's okay. It has a smoky tint to it. It has some light tannin, but it's not very heavy. The tannin's not very heavy in it. It's just a kind of light, maybe light to medium. It's, I think what really stands out is funny because the berries are there. Vanilla slightly. It's oaky. And yes, the bourbon. Yeah, it's kicking in. The bourbon barrel. The oakiness, that's really what's bringing out the smokiness in this thing and this wine. And I'll say that I've tried it. Thank you, Charlotte, from Charlotte. Uh-huh. I have tried it. It's okay. It's really not my preference. Now, some people really might like it. You might like it. In fact, some of you really might like it. I don't think Chris will like it too much. This might be, Chris might not care for it too much, but there's some other people that might like it. Okay. Not my taste, but it's all right. And I've had too much of it already, as you can probably tell. So anyway, I'm rambling on again. Once again, thank you everyone for joining me on the stream. Next week, like I said, maybe it's time to open up that Overstone. Maybe. I don't know. Or maybe I'll find something else. Maybe I'll go down to winestore-online.com in Blakeney, and we'll try something else. We'll see. It's a wild card. That's part of the experience. Who knows what will be the opening next week, but it'll probably be something very, very interesting. In the meantime, I hope everyone has a great week. I hope everyone has a safe week. Don't drink and drive. Don't text and drive. But I want everyone to have a safe week so they can come back and join me next week on the Saturday Night Wine Stream, and we can all get together and drink with Rick. Good night.